Good morning, good Monday morning, and happy April Fool's Day on this Monday, April 1st. My name is Dr. Ed Ackerley, and our producer is Matt Neely. In the studio with us is my brother, Bill Ackerley. And did I say Matt Neely? Did I say that right? Okay, I want to make sure. I've been messing up names here for some reason this morning. Coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, we have General Ted Maxwell will be the host. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger. And on Thursday, Tom Moulton. And I'll return on Friday with business success stories. You know, on Mondays, we talk about wonder at the University of Arizona. We talk about the good things that are going on and things that are meaningful to the community. The university is right in the middle of the community, and it is a driver of economics, but it's also a driver of research and of learning and of community. And it's been my great honor over the last 3.5 decades to be an instructor, a faculty member at the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona. And in that, I get to meet lots of students. I teach typically about anywhere between 500 and 1,000 students a year. And so when you multiply that times 35 years, that's a lot of students I've had over the years. And one of them, who is a wonderful person, is with us today, Vanessa Valencia. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So tell us, Vanessa, you're an alumnus of the University of Arizona. You're an ambassador, if you will, for the good things that are happening for students and applied learning and so forth. So why did you choose the University of Arizona? You could have been a Rhodes Scholar. You could have gone to MIT. You could have gone to Stanford. You could have gone to Harvard. You could have gone to lots of different places. You chose, or the University of Arizona chose you. Why did you decide to go to the U of A?
I started at Pima, and I had a professor. It was my ethics and law professor, and she was very encouraging. She recommended to apply to Eller. Mm-hmm. A lot of Pima students do get recommended, and I went and started attending the Eller Club to get to know, and I realized that a lot of people travel from all over the place to come here to the U of A.
It's amazing how many international students we have that come from, the largest population probably now is from China, but we've had a lot of Middle Eastern students in the business department, a lot of folks from India who come and are engaged in the process. Matter of fact, many of our faculty members and also are from those countries. And, even in Middle Eastern countries and even in China and in India, having a doctorate in marketing is considered pretty high up there. Maybe in our neck of the woods, maybe more like a medical doctor, a specialist, or maybe even a lawyer or something that would be a high caliber, no pun intended, a high caliber professional. And so we have a lot of people that come to the marketing department at the Eller College because of that prestige that the Eller College has. And of course, you're in the advertising business. Our namesake for the college is Carl Eller, who was, inducted into the American Advertising Hall of Fame in 2004. And so coming to Eller College, it's a competitive thing to get into Eller, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you have to do a little interview and be selected. And it's kind of nerve-wracking for a you're a transfer student from Pima, but for when you're at that age, not knowing if you're going to get into the Eller College, it's a daunting task, is it not?
Yeah, definitely had to prepare, but I was well equipped. I have work experience, and I did really well at Pima too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you came to the University of Arizona, and you started getting into the marketing department and so forth, and then you discovered your favorite teacher of all time. Is that correct? Is that how the history of this whole thing worked out? Your most favorite teacher ever in the history of the world?
My most favorite.
So I met you in what we call applied advertising, marketing 425, and it is I've been teaching this class the entire time I've been at the University of Arizona. Some of the other classes come and go, but this class I've taught since I started teaching in the Eller College, and it's an applied advertising class. So tell us a little bit about your experience in Marketing 425 and what you remember the challenge was that that we gave you and what your participation in that?
We had to come up with a student campaign regarding, it was some issues around the locally.
Right.
We chose...
It was through the Department of Homeland Security. They were challenging us locally to come up with initiatives that would change people's behavior.
Yeah, we chose the shootings, right. I guess. It was a difficult narrative to dive into because it's such a sensitive topic. But we chose to focus more on how students and professors can connect and communicate and build that connection so that we can bring awareness together and just a stronger connection between both.
Yeah. If there's a good thing out of the unfortunate incident that happened a couple years ago with Professor Meixner and that whole situation of campus safety, this class maybe epitomized the good things that come out of that and the community building and the awareness that came out of that. And so the class focused on conversations and making people feel safe, making faculty feel safe. And so from that, you know, you were kind of one of the drivers. I kept leaning on you during the class to be one of the drivers. What did you take away from the experience of applied learning in your own education?
Definitely a lot of teamwork is very important, communication. I really enjoyed getting the perspective from the faculty to be able to understand how the faculty feels, their point of view, it matters. And I think it was very important for students to also see that and get a more empathy and understanding of how it is on the other side.
Right. And, you know, so for so many years, we've been siloed, faculty on one side of the glass and the students on the other side of the glass, and getting a conversation back and forth between the two. So applied education is exactly that. It's to try and give real world challenges to students and get them to come up with real world solutions creatively, to come up with something. So Vanessa Valencia, you're a graduate of the University of Arizona and you're on to other things. What was your favorite class at the university? I know mine was, but what was your favorite thing that you did while you were there?
For sure yours was one of my favorites. Diving into, you know, the evolution of advertising was so much fun, all the different media that was selected throughout the years and how it evolved. Also learning about some of the marketing giants was very insightful.
Well, it kind of helped you because we're going to talk after the break about your career now and what you're doing in the advertising world and taking that degree and putting it to good use. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, and our guest this morning is a former student and alumnus of the University of Arizona, Vanessa Valencia. You know, one of the great things about being a faculty member at the U of A, and it's a unique position to be in, is to work with young people as they're getting their degrees and then witness them going out into the world and making a difference. And Vanessa has done a great job of as a student. You were one of the highlights in my last semester working with the team on our challenge that we did for applied advertising. But it's kind of neat that you have decided to move into the advertising world, which is what I've lived in for the last 47 years as an Ackerley advertising employee with my parents and my brothers and working in advertising. Well, you've accepted a position with Caliber Communications, and you're a big shot over there now, and and we think that's great. We ran into each other the other day at the American Advertising Federation, the local chapter of the Tucson Advertising Group, having their Addy Awards downtown, and you and I had a nice conversation there. Tell us a little bit about your journey into the professional world. Of course, you were dabbling in it while you were going to school, but now you're full-time at the agency. Tell us a little bit about that and your experience there.
Yeah, I work in the media department. So It's a lot of vendor relationship and communication, ensuring to place media placement, strategize with what media we want to place, and create media placement budgets.
You mentioned two words, and I'm actually typing them into my computer right now because I'm going to use this with my students. You talked about two really important things that we try to instill in the students at the University of Arizona. So, and that's one is developing relationships. And in a media buying job where you are taking budgets from clients that Caliber has and trying to allocate the money to the best possible media buy that you can get that will deliver the return on the investment so that you can communicate the information to the target market so that they will do something like pick up the phone or go to the store or go online and push a few buttons and buy something and create that exchange. Relationships are so powerful, are they not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And is that something, you know, I know we try and talk about that in class with undergraduates, but how does that manifest itself? How does relationship building manifest itself in your own life? And how do you go about doing that? What are some of the techniques that you use to just build a relationship? I noticed when you were in the green room, half the station came out to say hello to you and talk to you, and the management and so forth was out there chatting with you because of your position and the relationship you have with them. So tell us a little bit about building and handling relationships with this young part of your career.
It's a lot of maintain good communication. You have to be on the same page as far as what goals you're trying to achieve together. You have to also be empathetic and treat people as humans, not just a goal. So maintaining relationships is about understanding each other as well as how we are as humans.
That's ironic that you would say that, because when you were in my class, and you were not one of the five or six leaders of the different departments per se, is that you were kind of leading from behind, I want to say, or leading from the side, and we leaned on you quite a bit during that. With all due respect, you're just a tad more mature than the average student, and you have a little bit broader perspective because you've had some real life experiences at the spa and other places where you've worked, and so your ability to get the relationship aspect of that whole process together was pretty powerful. I was impressed by how you did that. So you have a gift for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I often say that working as a media buyer for a large agency like Caliber is like taking 10 or 12 500-piece jigsaw puzzles and taking the covers off the boxes and throwing them out on a table and trying to make sense of a bunch of different things. I mean, there's, you know, mixing up different puzzles is not the easiest thing to figure out. So it's a tough job, don't you, to try and spend the money in a way that's meaningful for your clients.
Yeah, it's challenging, but I do like the challenge. It's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of juggling, for sure. But in the end, it's about the client's goals. Who are they trying to reach? The demographics, where they start their target market, and just trying to get through the message to their target market.
Right. We're talking with Vanessa Valencia. She is a media buyer in the media department at Caliber Communications here in Tucson, former student at the University of Arizona, and she's just launching her career now in the media world and working with clients to try and maximize their investment in advertising. You know, we're sitting here in the studio of a radio station, and then you know, there's obviously TV and digital and outdoor and digital billboards and sponsorships of University of Arizona football games and backs of cash register receipts, and you can go on and on and on of all the options that are available for a media buyer. It's hard sometimes to pick out of that malaise of activity that you can get your message out. It's kind of sometimes hard to pick which one is the best one. And how do you do that? How do you know which one is the best?
You have to look at the overall market in general. Where do those consumers live? Mm-hmm. What do they do? What activities do they do? What platforms are they using?
Right.
What is accessible to them?
We talk about in the class, the match, I call it the match game. You got to match the market, which is the consumer, match the market with the media, What are they listening to? What are they viewing? What are they seeing? What are they engaging with? And you got to match that to the message, which is what are we going to say to them to get them to act? So you have to match the market to the media to the message, and that message has to be relevant back to the market. And that's what your job is pretty much full time. Now, in terms of creative, that usually goes through the creative department, okay. But you have a little bit of input on that probably, correct?
Right now, not so much, but I have been organizing with interviews, mm-hmm. and I have overseen those and make sure that the video is coming out as we want it.
Right, right. And as a media buyer, you have to know which form of media is best to communicate that message in the most powerful way. And so you got to know a little bit about creativity and television and radio and so forth in order to make that happen. So what does your future look like? I know that's a silly, you know, where are you going to be in 5 years? I realize there's that that pedestrian discussion, but what does your career look like? I know you're going to spend several years here at Caliber and do well there, but what do you want to do with this degree in marketing and as you move forward in your life? What are your plans?
Right now I'm exploring. I am thinking about more education. Eller really did, the undergraduate program really did highlight my work ethic in a different way, where I understood how teamwork is very important and how to hold others and yourself accountable, meet deadlines, and communicate. So I would like to, I'm starting to do some research to look into either the master's or MBA. Mm-hmm. At Eller.
You know, the MBA is world famous. I think it's now number 7, I think, in public institutions. I think the Eller Executive MBA is actually at number 4 in the country, rated by U.S. News and World Report. And so, you know, going to Eller and getting an Eller MBA is great. And I probably should have gone back and gotten one as well before I got the doctorate. But a lot of math in the MBA program. And I don't say a lot of math, but there's certainly statistics and finance and accounting and those kind of things that you have to be aware of. The Master of Science in Marketing, however, is less math. It's more focused on the relations side and the analytical side so the MSM in marketing would be a good choice for you as well. And then from there, if you go back and get that degree, do you want to teach or do you want to go back into the stay in the business world? Do you want to be an entrepreneur and open your own shop, or do you want to become a nun? What do you want to do?
Definitely not a nun. But I would just kind of see what I'm open to at that point. What new experiences, what new opportunities I'd be open to at that point. I would either, continue professionally.
Right. Well, Vanessa Valencia, you know, you represent what is so great about the University of Arizona is the students and the learning and the knowledge that's taking place there. We sometimes overlook that. We drive by Speedway Campbell and don't really necessarily think about that, but you're the epitome of what we try to do in the classroom to try and launch people onto a career that is powerful and meaningful in their lives. And you certainly are doing that with Caliber Communications and in the media department. And we're real so thankful and so proud of you and that you do a really good job of advocating for the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. So we really appreciate you being here today and for being part of Jump in Tucson. Is there anybody that you'd like to give a shout out to at Caliber or any place like that? That would be awesome, so that you can maybe get that year-end bonus or that Easter bonus, spring bonus, that St. Patrick's Day bonus or whatever it is.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I will shout out everybody at Caliber Group to my team.
They've been great. They've been really supportive of you.
And amazing, yeah. The whole way.
Every time you got an award at the University of Arizona, they would put it out on social media and give you the kudos and the congratulations on your win and or your acknowledgement or whatever. And I just thought it's so nice to have a group like you have, wonderful people over at Caliber that would support you educational endeavors, but also now as you pursue your professional career. So we'll have you back and we'll talk about the success that Vanessa Valencia has had in her move into the professional world. So great to see you again, and fantastic to have you on Jumpin' Tucson.
Thank you so much. Great to see you.
We'll be back in just a minute with the second half. You're listening to the Wonder Series of Jumpin' Tucson on KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday, April 1st edition. Happy April Fool's Day. You know, on Mondays, we talk about wonder at the University of Arizona, the good things that are going on and the things that are happening that affect our community in a positive way, in a powerful way. And part of that is having good people that work there and do the good work of the mission of the Land-Grant University. And so our guests today, we're gonna talk with two gentlemen who are improving our community each and every day. And see if I get this right, Luis. It's Luis Coronado Guel.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to you. And we also have Frank Valenzuela. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Luis, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You have 6 lines in your title from the University of Arizona. You are the director of the SBS Mexico Initiatives Project. You're a professor in the Department of History. You're a professor in the Mexican American Studies Department. You're a faculty member of the Binational Migration Institute. You're a research person from the Southwest Center, and you're an affiliate with the Public History Collaborative. So that's a pretty impressive list of activities that you do for both the university and the community in the Southwest. So how did you get to be connected with the University of Arizona, and how did your life all start there with and being engaged with the U of A?
Thank you so much. First, I want to thank you, Ed, for the invitation, for having us here. I think it's a great space for you know, being connected with Tucson and with the Tucson community. Okay. And getting to your question, well, I'm originally from Mexico, Central Mexico.
I thought you had an Italian accent. I thought that was Italian. I didn't realize that was a Mexican accent. What did you say? Catalan, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, my family came from Catalonia, yeah, right? But it was almost 2 centuries ago, but so now I'm considering myself from San Luis Potosí. I'm from Tucson.
Right.
So I came here to study my PhD, mm-hmm, under a very, very prominent historian, Professor William Beasley, who is, mm-hmm, one of the pioneers of the cultural history approach applied to Latin America and Mexico. So I basically met him while I was studying my master's degree in history down there in San Luis Potosí, and that's how I got connected with the University of Arizona. So after spending only 8 years
right,
doing my PhD, I got engaged with this community and with the university, and after that, I got the opportunity to have a postdoc position, mm-hmm, in the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences at the university. And then I switched into my current position as director of the Office of Social and Behavioral Sciences, Mexico Initiatives.
Right. You know, that's one of the departments. When I got my appointment at the Eller College a couple of years ago, I'd been teaching for about 30 years, and the Eller College gave me a career track position, and I had to give up some of my other teaching responsibilities in other departments, but they let me keep my social and behavior sciences appointment. So I do teach a communication and leadership class in the spring, and a professional creative in the fall. And it's at the SBS, great college, and one of the bigger ones on campus too. It has a very, if you want to have liberal arts, I mean, there's just so many different facets to SBS. It's amazing. Well, the other person with us is Frank Valenzuela, and Frank, you and I go way back in this town, and
that's right,
we've had a long history with one another. Most recently, you and I had a sentence, or a prison sentence, that was imposed upon us. I'm just teasing. we were working, I was president, and Frank was vice president of the Rito Park Foundation, which was trying to save that cultural icon in the middle of Tucson at First Avenue and River Road, and you did a great job there. Thank you for all your service to the foundation.
Thank you.
And you'd been coming there since you were a little kid.
That's right.
And you're going to continue to go there, and so am I, and we're going to get racing back, and it's going to be great, and all is going to be well. Yeah, we're on target for making everything come together. But Frank, tell us a little bit about your banking career and your, you know, you've been a lifelong Tucsonan and your engagement in the community and with the University of Arizona.
Okay, I started in banking in high school, 1965. Mm-hmm. I went to school half a day and worked the other half day filing checks, which is no longer done in any bank.
Right.
And I stayed in banking for 41 years. Mm-hmm. After that, I ran a nonprofit for about 10 years that did very well. We did charter school monitoring. We did small business loans.
Mm-hmm.
We did the down payment assistance programs for the city and county. So during all that time, I got involved with quite a number of nonprofits, beginning with the Industrial Development Authority of Pima County, which I'm still on that board. I got
You're supposed to be retired. We talked about this. You're supposed to be retired.
I'm supposed to be retired, right.
And you're doing more now than you did when you were working.
That's
Come on.
Right. I don't know how I found time to work.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm also part of Tucson, Mexico Sister Cities.
Right.
I'm the chair of Southern Arizona Land Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the present chair of the Patronato San Javier, which is preserving the mission, San Javier mission, for future generations.
Yeah, I have a familial connection to that. Of course, over the last decade or two, the Tucson Arizona Boys Chorus has traditionally gone out at Christmas time and done a beautiful concert in the church.
It's amazing. Is a beautiful concert. It's our biggest fundraiser for Patronato, and we're doing quite a few other projects there. We're looking at the facade. We're looking at starting the renovation of the facade.
Yeah, which is several hundred years old, right?
It's 1797.
Holy goodness, yeah. The church is beautiful, though. What's been done to it already is just the inside, the ceiling, and all that is amazing.
Oh, yeah. We're looking at the lighting. We're looking at the floors. We're looking at the what's called the Grand John Gate, which is in the rear of the church, because all of that needs renovation.
Frank and I were at lunch the other day, and we were laughing about the fact that Frank and I are not the small people that built the church in the 1700s, and there's this one door at the back of a San Javier mission that, you know, I have to turn sideways to get through it. It's amazing how small the doors were back then.
Yeah. Yep. We had to change the entrance this year, and we went through that small door. All our guests went through that small door.
You and I are about 6'4", 6'3", and, you know, trying to bend down and get underneath that little...
And we're never going to be little people.
No. But it's funny though when you think about that's just an interesting fact about humankind that 200 years ago we were a lot smaller people, and in today's world we're much bigger. Well, that's a great history, and you've done great work, Frank, yourself in terms of managing the sister cities, and we're going to talk about that when we come back. But the whole concept of the University of Arizona being plopped down in the middle of a community like this has made a huge difference. And obviously, Tucson is considered a university town because of that very reason. So, and your engagement with the U of A has been a lifelong sports fan and
lifelong sports fan, season ticket holder since 1972.
Right.
So I'm one of the old veterans, both in basketball and football, and occasionally with baseball.
Yeah, last week we had the both the men's and the women's, the week before the women and the men this past week, finishing up their run in the NC2As. It was a great run there. We're fortunate to have Adia Barnes and Tommy Lloyd and now our new football coach Brent Brennan. We're looking forward to football season, and it's great. My friend Sixto Molino, who you know well, says something about the University of Arizona athletics, especially football, that it's the one thing in town that every single person in town can come together and and focus on. We're not haves and have-nots. We're not Republican and Democrat. We're not Christian and Jewish and Islamic and divisions or whatever division you want. We all come together in the same thing. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about one really fantastic thing that you both are involved in, and that is the Sister Cities Project. And We'll come back and talk about the good things that are going on there. And you're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder version, where we talk about the good things going on at and through the University of Arizona. We'll be back in just a minute after we hear a few great sponsors who are helping us support Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. This is the Monday April Fool's version of Wonder at the University of Arizona, where we talk about the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. So I'm going to ask a trivia question here. What do Guadalajara, Mazatlan, Ciudad Obregón, and Puerto Peñasco have in common with Tucson? So, Frank, I'm going to have you answer that question.
Okay. They are all part of Tucson, Mexico sister cities. They are our sister cities that have been recognized by the city and county. And we collaborate on many projects with those cities. One of the problems we had is that COVID kind of stopped us from doing a whole lot of stuff during that time period. But we're back in the saddle, you might say. Mm-hmm. We've done quite a few things with Guadalajara. We've done quite a few things with Puerto Peñasco. We've actually visited with all the cities at one time or another. In fact, Mayor Rothschild visited Guadalajara and asked us to participate with a signing of renewing the agreement, the sister cities agreement, with Tucson and Guadalajara. Great. Guadalajara was our first sister city. 1972 was the year that that the sister cities collaboration started with our first sister city, Guadalajara.
So with us also is Dr. Luis E. Coronado Guel, who is Catalan. I did that pretty good, didn't I? Yeah. And so you're in your term as running the Sister Cities organization. So what are the initiatives that you're working on with the city of Tucson, with those four major cities in Mexico, and what is your group trying to do when we talk about sister cities? What does that mean, and what are you trying to do?
Well, the mission of Tucson, Mexico Sister Cities basically is what we have put in a slogan as being the vehicle of the citizen diplomacy, mm-hmm. which is an important function to connect communities. Back in the 1950s, when the concept of sister cities was released, the idea was going above and beyond of what we know as diplomacy in terms of institutional collaboration of nation states, mm-hmm. right? So having more specifically collaboration between cities, mm-hmm. which is in many ways more human, in many ways it's sometimes more relevant for specific things that are going on in the cities. And our missions have, rely on three specific important areas. One of them is economic development, mm-hmm. the other is humanitarian and social issues, and the other is cultural exchange and educational purposes. So on those areas, as Frank mentioned, after the pandemic, our association has been through some challenges. Mm-hmm. We have lost members, we have lost contact with some usual partners we used to have in the past. So right now I'm trying to enable the organization into a new set of initiatives we would put in place, but we need the support of the community, the support of businesses and organizations to do that. My vision of this association is that while we need obviously get involved in all kinds of projects, we basically want and aspire to become the platform that bring together people of these sister cities in these areas. So I have three set of initiatives I have proposed to my board, to propose to my membership. One of them is granting small pots of money to organizations on diplomacy, community engagement, which is basically building bridges in cultural and educational purposes. The second is economic development fellowships, which basically can enable smaller organizations to bring some people who basically run specific activities on these areas, bringing together industry, businesses, economic development, labor, tourism, right? And the third one, it's public policy partnerships, which we have been repeatedly requested from our sister cities in Mexico to get some knowledge exchange on specific areas of water management, waste management, all these kind of urban problems that our cities and our communities face and usually are out of the realm of the institutional diplomacy.
Right, right. So these are all, economic development, cultural, small grants and economic development fellowships and so forth. Frank, one of the things that, often comes up in our informal conversations with people is about the security of the exchange of people going down to Mexico. And you certainly are well-versed in this. You have a place down in Puerto Peñasco, and you travel with your wife down there frequently. No problema. No hay problema. Nada.
No problems at all. In fact, we live in a community in Puerto Peñasco. Our place is in a community in Puerto Peñasco that has security 24/7.
Right.
When we enter the country, Mexico, there is a 66-mile drive that's pretty desolate.
Right.
You just have to keep your eyes and ears open. Mm-hmm. One of the things I would recommend is that people do not drive at night.
Right.
It is too dark.
Right.
There's nothing in
between. There's no lights. Yeah. There's no lights on the street.
No light on the streets. There's very little traffic during mm-hmm. the evening. Lots of traffic, especially during Semana Santa and holidays. Both Americans and Mexicans travel that route. Yeah. As far as any activity that we've had, criminal activity, we have not experienced any at all.
Very limited. And, there's the highway is probably packed today from people coming back from Rocky Point for Easter Sunday. And so today, Monday, they're probably full. So, that's kind of one of the things you have to overcome is the fear that people have that there might be some danger to being engaged. But when you go to Guadalajara, Mazatlan, Ciudad Obregón, or Rocky Point, Puerto Peñasco, and that's not a problem. And it's just like if you would fly to Madrid or if you would fly to Paris or if you'd fly to some other in Montreal, it's just going to another city. And
right.
Certainly all of those cities have their challenges with safety and concerns like that. But the robust partnership between these cities and Tucson is really important and has been for centuries. So how does someone get involved in sister cities or to help, you ask for how does the community get involved? What can the community do to support you guys in your effort? So what would you ask for the community?
Well, right now we are actually putting an effort in bringing together the community of Southern Arizona on a Tucson, Mexico sister cities golf tournament.
Oh, that's right.
We are actually asking the community, the businesses, their support, engaging in this activity, because one of the main targets we have out of this tournament is reposition Tucson, Mexico sister cities
right.
in the visibility in this region. And the other is also engaging new generations in our membership, because
mm-hmm.
we need a lot of people who is raising a family, who is engaged in different economic activities or academic activities into these different communities in Southern Arizona. So we are inviting everyone to this, I would say, relaunch of our association, because our aspiration is getting back to the old days in which we were fully involved in promoting this awareness of the importance of the borders and the border community with Mexico. And I actually want to mention now that you said, Ed, the importance of debunking, right, the black legend of the border, right? The border is obviously a place that has challenges in security, but on the other hand, we can see that actually people is collaborating both sides of the border. We right. have the same set of issues,
right.
and we want to bring together people in the same effort to overcome those challenges.
That discussion over the last few months in the presidential cycles of the using the border issue as a wedge issue between our the folks that are in government, but also the citizenry. And we need to kind of maybe stop that and work together collaboratively. Well, thank you both so much for being here on Jump in Tucson. Sister Cities is an important part of our of the web that we weave here in the community. So Dr. Luis E. Coronado Guel, and I'll call you Dr. Frank Valenzuela as well. I'll give you a doctorate.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both for coming, and thank you all for what you do for the city of Tucson and for the our regions in Mexico that we're such a fond of and have spent a lot of time there. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson, give us a call. Look us up on jumpintucson.com. This is Tucson's only live local news talk station, KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, and you're listening to Jump in Tucson.